The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
There you are, Michael Coleman. He is the man on a mission. Mission Minded to keep your mind in mission, your mission in your mind. Heart of Alabama Food Bank. By the way, I have several businesses now that we have. I think we have 19 shows now on Tony Curry Radio. You have two of them. You have the Mission Minded and the Bite by Bite. I had someone that was coming in that was very interested in looking at our umbrella of different shows. And he specifically pointed out your show. He said, "Oh, I see that you do stuff, non-for-profit stuff." And I said, "Yeah." I said, I've got the time and the content, and I'm just trying to build out these different shows. I said, "I want to do a show with lawyers. I want to do shows about sports. I want to do shows about, Home Field Advantage," which I just did a few minutes ago. It's just taken off. We do rock and roll shows. And this is just, Michael's been a good friend of mine for a long period of time, and I think it's really important. And it's amazing because as we've started some of these shows, it seems like the importance of these shows are starting to bear a little bit more weight. I don't know if talking about Feeding America and talking about what had happened, the last 5 or 6 years, but certainly with COVID and the free lunch situation, a lot's changed in your world over the last 3 or 4 years. And I'm happy that we could actually talk our way through it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, it takes something like a COVID to understand the importance of nonprofits and the gaps that they fill. And because everybody, we're all out there trying to talk to people about the importance of what we do, not to boost ourselves, but to bring attention and shine a light on the challenges in society that, let's be frank, if a lot of people who have resources, they can bypass those. They don't have to get bogged down in that. But thankfully, across our country, we have a very giving society as a whole. And we care about people who are not as fortunate in some areas or who are struggling with things. And there's just tons of areas out there that even the resources of the government can't adequately address. You need people on the ground who care about these issues and to rally the community to do those kind of things. And when you see tragedy, and even with the recent disaster relief efforts,
yeah.
You really see the best in America come out when it comes to addressing these kind of needs.
Man, so, you really do. I mean, I know there's so many weird, crappy things going on in this world, but there are so many good things. And please remember that. I've got several friends of mine that take a van full of guys here from the Birmingham area, and they went down for Helene. And by the time they turned around, they just turned their van back around. And thank goodness they're in a situation where they're retired and they can do that. But they bring their own vest and they go down. And it is help. I mean, they're just picking up boards and doing what they can. And I love that.
Right.
There's a lot of good people out there. Speaking of giving, Taylor Swift stroked a check for $5 million to Feeding America a couple days ago. She's a wonderful individual. She's a great business person. She can certainly afford it. And I'm glad that she feels the need to let us know she's done that, which is fine. I guess it's some people don't like to be recognized for what they do. But she certainly is doing that, which is great. I'd rather her, take the recognition and give and not give it all. What does that do for Feeding America? $5 million.
It's not insignificant. When you're talking about, and so I don't want to devalue that at all. Very thankful for everybody who contributes. So Feeding America then is the national organization works with large companies like Walmart and chain grocery stores and great big companies. And a lot of what they do with the funds really is to help lessen some of the cost for us. So Feeding America itself is not on the ground distributing food.
Yeah.
They're contracted with us as food banks. So, but what they do is when they take donations like that, not only does it cover the cost, because they have like transportation issues. They're working with the USDA on, big level stuff. They're on the ground right now and still in North Carolina and in Florida due to the disaster relief, because we have a huge disaster relief. So we need their staff. We need, so their operations have to be paid for, but they're really great about bringing in funding like that, mm-hmm. and then applying it oftentimes to grant opportunities. So we don't know if Taylor Swift possibly could have said, hey, I want this to go towards children's programs or disaster relief.
And I believe she earmarked it for something. I'm not sure exactly what it was. It came along with an email or Instagram or something like that. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's true of any gift that's made in a nonprofit. You can typically earmark it. I'm reminded of Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she gave a couple hundred million dollars across. So she gave certain food banks, and I don't even know the criteria. Certain food banks got several million dollars themselves. And then she gave like $20 million to start an EDI grant program. So she hit on several departments, but I think it was a couple hundred million dollars. Yes. Very significant. Yeah.
She's given a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good to point out, because at a national level, $5 million, still a great gift, still impactful. If that gift is given to an individual food bank, that can be an endowment that helps support that food bank for many, many years, mm-hmm. you know? So, when we get those kind of transformational gifts, which are very rare, Mackenzie Scott coming around and being able to give that to certain food banks, I mean, it was a total game changer for us. That's what and that was even before I got here, they had designated Harvey Alabama Food Bank as receiving one of those gifts.
Wow.
And so, yes. So what our board did, and I think very wisely, was, went to Mackenzie Scott, and she gave it as unrestricted funds. She's like, y'all use it for what you want to. And so our board said, hey, why don't we put this in an endowment fund? Every year we'll pull out 4% of the principal and apply to operating needs for that year, thinking that it'll replenish itself every year.
Sure.
So it's more than it's at least equal to a little bit more than an annual budget of ours. So if we didn't get another dime, we have that, if you will, rainy day fund or whatever to fall back on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, we wouldn't have had it without that kind of gift. And so what that allows us to do is maybe take more initiatives or take a little bit more risk with some of our programs, because we have a little bit of an emergency safety net. Mm-hmm. And so that gets into, you know, the impact that a gift like that can make at a local food bank versus a national level, where it gets absorbed in there. It gets used. It's needed. But you don't see quite the same impact because it gets brought in with other millions, you know.
Yeah. Before we get into our topic, I wanted to ask you, because it is topical with the two hurricanes that have hit the Florida coast and the state of Florida the last couple of weeks. Do feeding banks work with FEMA? First of all, that's the one question. It was actually an email that we got from Tom in Hueytown. He wanted to know how you guys work with FEMA, if in fact you do work with FEMA. And I wanted to get your ideas, because I consider you, while you're not I guess you're a government assisted program. I mean, you get assistance from the government and you do things.
There's a little bit, not, yeah.
A little bit there, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I just get this feeling that FEMA's just gotten a really raw deal. And I know where it's coming from. And I know it's a political situation. And I think that we have been hit with so many unprecedented storms recently. I think Katrina was one of those things where we had never seen anything like that. And so, you know, yeah, it looked like we didn't know what the hell was going on. Yeah, people were on their rooftops for a week. I get that. Unfortunately, we just didn't have the manpower. We'd never been through anything like that.
Right.
And COVID, too. We'd never been through something where it killed a million people. And so people were like, you know, you're sending mixed messages. Well, you know, the CDC didn't even know what was going on. They were doing the best they could. And of course, Fauci caught hell for everything that he ever said. If you said one thing, well, I thought you said this. Well, we're all learning on the job here, you know? And
right.
So I'm like, be
true.
Compassionate and be patient. It's going to happen. Just stop buying toilet paper. We're going to be okay. What are your thoughts on what FEMA's done, how they're doing, how it works as a government agency, and how that affects you guys?
Yeah, so let's go back to Katrina. Of course, I wasn't in this feel when Katrina hit. But if you'll remember, a lot of that, a lot of the problems, and I get President Bush received lots of criticism, and maybe that was absolutely warranted. That's a little bit of a different discussion, but you remember there was a whole parking lot of buses that were just waiting, but there wasn't local coordination. Mm-hmm. So when you look at a disaster relief, the problem is the first thing we want to do is start, who can we blame? Let me look around for anybody who didn't do their job perfectly. So then I can point a finger at somebody else to take the pressure off me. But if you look at it objectively, you understand there's a federal response, there's a state response, and then there's a local, a city or a county response. And at any point in that whole chain, they each have different things and different roles to play. And so any break in communications or something like that can cause a redundancy of something mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily need. It always, to me, boils down to communication. Then you have these volunteer organizations. You'll have churches that are like, hey, we're gathering up supplies on a big trailer and we're hauling them up there. And, you know, Church of the Highlands here in the state of Alabama is a huge church, and they have a huge disaster relief effort. Anything like that happens, they load up supplies and send them. I tend to be less critical of FEMA. A lot of people think FEMA is the magic wand that you wave that fixes everybody's problems right away. The truth of the matter is that the food bank is on the ground usually before FEMA gets on the ground, because a food bank has access to shelf stable food and water. So it can, if it can get access, like if there's a road that's open or a pathway that's open, you can get food and food and water with displaced people, or even with people who are working on the ground there, trying to clear rubble from the roads, linemen trying to put stuff up to bring water into an area and all that. Can just begin the healing process. Because think about it, you can lose things, but a house can be rebuilt and all that. But think of people's state of mind. They might feel hopeless and like I don't even know where my next meal is going to come from mm-hmm. and dejected. And so coming on the ground with aid right away, it can be a huge lift just psychologically. And we do that, like I said, typically before FEMA, but we understand we're only a piece of the solution. FEMA is bringing a solution that the food bank world can't do. So we want to collaborate with FEMA. We want to help them. We're not competing with each other. It's all about getting to an area and providing solace and anything we can do to an incredibly difficult situation. And lots of times there's all sorts of barriers and political games where people are like, no, this is my area. You can't get in here, and makes it very difficult on FEMA. Or it could be like, it's no telling. There's probably difficult to get in some of these areas hit by the hurricane and tornadoes to even begin cleanup because the roads are blocked or there's no power and, you know, all the many things that are going on. So I'm not near as critical of FEMA, because I don't care if a Democrat's running the White House or Republicans running the White House. The people in FEMA typically are people who are there through administrations. They're mm-hmm. not appointees over gotcha. An agency. Yeah. And they genuinely care, and they're doing the best that they can. And sometimes it goes smoothly, sometimes it don't. My expectation is, yeah, you know, what do we do well? Every time there should be an after action review that says, hey, what do we do well? What lessons did we learn that we can go ahead and fix for next time? Mm-hmm. How can we, you know, better our communication? Just all that, just always looking to get better. And I'm down for that, because any episode you're going to have, you're always going to have, as long as you got humans involved, you're going to have some mistakes. So you always just want to say, okay, we're going to go into it. We're going to do the best we can. Here's the plan. You want somebody or some way to identify when what you had planned doesn't happen, to capture that, to say why, analyze it, work. It may be a process. It may be a, hey, we didn't have enough people here or had too many here, whatever it is. But just learn from it and grow from it as an agency and get those lessons learned. And so I cut agencies like that a lot of slack, because knowing there's going to be mistakes, these are not people who don't care. There is, but there may be flaws, you know, with execution.
Yeah. And you learn
something. It really does bother me when there's a lot of people whose lives, you know, they lost their lives. Of course, we're praying for those families. Also people who, again, their whole world's been thrown upside down. They may have survived, but their homes are gone and whatever, and replacing those. And now they're talking about how difficult it's going to be to get more and more insurance. More and more insurance companies are going to be pulling out. And there's a lot this left in this wake, the wake of this storm. And to politicize it, and I get the season we're in, it's right before the election. It's just unfortunate because we weaponize this, and both parties are guilty of it.
Yeah,
weaponizing it. And the people who are most affected are the people who are just trying to put the pieces back together.
I was really surprised by the budget of FEMA. They said they spent $9 million the last 8 days through these two storms, and that was roughly half their budget. And I was like, half their budget? And I've gotten so used to seeing the B and the T word, billions and trillions. Yeah. Millions doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, sure. It really doesn't. And so when I'm seeing they had a budget of $20 million, I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's going to have to go up. I would have thought it'd be billions of dollars.
Well,
and again, I always try to remember, I always come from the world that government doesn't owe me anything.
Right.
Okay. I mentioned last time, you know, that I get this $5,000 check, you know, during COVID. I don't even know what it was for. And I had to give half of it to my ex, but I was like, thanks. I mean, I couldn't believe that we were getting stipends and we were getting these checks per kid and stuff like that. I felt like sometimes we expect that. We don't want the government to get in the middle of our business. We don't want big government unless we need them to stroke us a check. And, you know, there's a lot of countries that don't even have something like FEMA, where you're just on your own. And so, you know, but
well, I heard something along that money. I don't know what they're, you know, I'd be interested to see what I would be shocked if it's as low as that. But I will say this. Every time something like this happens, they do this on a case-by-case basis. And I heard somebody on a political show talk about this, that the reason that I don't like this being made a political issue is because FEMA doesn't have all the funds already. What typically happens is when something happens, then they petition Congress to do a special appropriations to cover the cost. So they see the damage, they come up with an estimate, they say, hey, we need $250 million to be able to come in and do this, whether it's financial assistance, whether it's low interest, whatever it is, you know, to be able to start rebuilding. So they're going to go back to Congress, and it may be when they come in for, you know, right after the election for that lame duck session.
Yeah.
But they usually have to go back and get appropriations for every disaster, and then Congress approves it, and then that's where the funding is going to come from. I don't remember FEMA, like, they're going to anticipate, you know, a $1 billion. They're going to give you a $1 billion budget, because they may not need that if we don't have an active hurricane season, or there's not a lot of, damage from tornadoes and stuff like that. That may be, I'm not saying that because I absolutely don't know why their budget's low, but I do know that they do go back to Congress during these things and get special appropriations to cover the cost.
By the way, to put things in perspective, as we do the show here on October 11th, this is Mission Minded. So keep your mind, your mission in mind. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, covers 35 counties, does fantastic work down there in Montgomery. Tesla stock is down 8% today. That is $60 billion that Elon Musk has
lost. Easy come, easy go, right?
I saw that and I was like, wait a minute. I know he spent like $45 billion on Twitter, and I know that was, it didn't break him, but I know it's all on paper, but when you talk about losing, and the stock is still like at $213, I mean, it's fine. But it lost 8% today because he's trying to do some autonomous cab thing where supposed to be able to take 20 people at a time or something. I don't know. But he's like, within 15 years, everything will be fully autonomous. So it's weird. All right. We got a few minutes here, and I want to get into something that we talked about at the top of the show, and that is new. I know when I first came to town, we were the new Rock 99. And we were told by consultants and everyone else that it was very important to use that word new as long as we could. We were new for 3 years until we finally dropped new because perceptually speaking, whenever you see something new, evidently it's supposed to get people involved. They want to try you. They want to either eat at your restaurant. They want to listen to your radio station. They want to come to the food bank, whatever. When something's new, it gets people excited. And therefore, and I go back to an email question we had earlier about why do these restaurants, why does Taco Bell always have a new item on their menu every stinking week? It's the same thing over and over and over again. It's repackaged. It's a new sauce. It's a new Frito. They throw one thing in there and all of a sudden it's the same thing. It's just repackaged. It's the pickle, right? It's sliced, it's diced, it's you know, breaded, it's whatever. And we do, we see the Hardee's is another one of those businesses where every week they've got some thing with, it's got like everything but the kitchen sink on. I'm like, do people really eat this thing? And then some people say, yeah, I love it. And then as soon as you start liking it, it's gone. And then it'll come back a little bit later. I know, I remember, and occasionally, the Big Mac, I don't know if it was for their anniversary or something, but they had a super Big Mac that came out about 2 years ago. And it was the best. It reminded me of Big Boy. It reminded me of Frisch's Big Boy.
Yeah.
It was a supersized, and it had another patty of meat on it. It was fantastic. And I wish they'd bring that back. And maybe I need to write a letter or something like that. But why is it so important that we continually, and you were just talking before we came on the air, that you have a couple of brand new initiatives. Now, this is probably a little different than what we're talking about here. But it is something new that's coming in with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Why is it so important that we keep fresh and we continue to throw new things, even when we know they're not going to work?
Let's look at it from a for-profit business. It doesn't matter which fast food chain you pull in, it's going to have big posters on the windows. Mm-hmm. Try this. And it's either a combination for a new price. Hey, our new $5 meal. So it may not be a new product, but it's a new price. Or it may be a new sandwich. The Big Mac now has two chicken patties. Mm-hmm. Big Mac with chicken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because there is definitely psychology involved. And if you are somebody who does the same thing day in and day out, and your product, people may like it, but, and there's, it can be a go-to thing, but there's something to be said about your product becoming stale and people not talking about it. If you can create word of mouth buzz, and of course that has to start from somewhere. So there has to be a little bit of you got to get people talking about it. Mm-hmm. So think about entertainment. You know, I was watching not too long ago, somebody talking about why movies, like there's great movies like Shawshank Redemption, who I think IMDb, is that it? Mm-hmm. They rated it the number one movie of all time.
Great
movie. Okay.
Yeah.
But it crapped out at the box office. Mm-hmm. And I think they were talking to doing an interview. And the response to, you know, how could a movie who does so great once people see it? And it was said, well, it came out a certain time of the year. It didn't get a lot of advertisement. It didn't get a lot of buzz. Like, you didn't get the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't. But then you hear these movies sometimes that cost an independent filmmaker, and it goes, and then you start getting word of mouth, and it starts spreading, and they all of a sudden it costs $20 million, and they get $200 million.
Was the Blair Witch thing? Was it the Blair Witch thing?
That's probably a great example.
$30,000 to make. Yeah, it blew up. Yeah.
Those kind of things happen. So that word of mouth. And so there's such value in that. But the question is, okay, nobody's talking. We haven't done anything different. So nobody's talking about burger joint A. Everybody's talking about burger joint B. Now, they may end up not liking the product at burger joint B, but now a lot of people are, first of all, they're talking about it, so it refreshes their brand. Same reason you change logos every once in a while for that same kind of freshness. So you get people talking about it and they're like, oh, you know what? I forgot even a Burger King was over here, but they do have this sandwich. I think I'm going to swing in it. And so if you like it, then you're like, hey, I really like that. Now you're out talking about it. And then you're like, hey, I want to go back and get it again. And so there's just such competition, but you can see that in the drink market. You can, you know, the beverage market, you can see that just on and on. Everybody's fighting for everybody's attention. Well, you're not going to be in the conversation. I mean, you could have a new product that comes out and there's not many industries where people go, nope, I'm not interested in any new product, any new flavors, any new scents or anything. I have my favorite and I'm sticking to it, you know?
Okay.
You will lose share, industry share. And when you're talking about like, I lose a half a point of share to another company, you could be talking millions of dollars. Yeah. I mean, half a point of share, half a percentage of some doesn't sound like anything, but when you look at it and what it equals to in terms of dollars, it's huge, has ramifications.
Give me a product, a food, a product, or something that used to exist that you absolutely love that no longer exists. I've got one off the top, so I'll give you time to think about it. There's this thing called cheese waffles. They were made by Wise Foods, who still exist, by the way. And they were like little crackers, maybe the size of a Ritz, but they were a little more crisper, and they had this just nasty, dark, chalky cheese filling that was really, really salty. I mean, it was super salty.
Yeah.
And they were, and I remember because I used to snack on them when I was working out, and I remember they were a gram of fat each. So if I had like 10 of them, I was eating like my entire day's worth of stuff, but they were so stinking good. And I actually called the company and they sent me a box of cheese waffles, and I couldn't eat them fast enough because they were going to go stale before I finished them. And to this day, they don't make them anymore. And I wonder why they don't make cheese waffles. I can't find anything that's even close to these cheese waffles. I've tried to make them myself. I would love to have a bag of these cheese waffles. But that's one thing that I think about. And like the Super Big Mac, I'd invite that back too.
Well, you talk about something closer to home. Think about Golden Flake chips. So Golden Flake was a brand that I remember growing up that Bear Bryant on his shows would sit mm-hmm. there with a bottle of Coke, and Golden Flake was the sponsor. It was a Golden Flake bag. Mm-hmm. And back then, they maybe had barbecue and regular.
Yeah.
But then as time went on, they came out with like the Ruffle, the Ridges, mm-hmm. and so as competitors came along, and then the chip industry just started growing, and they had a chip called Sweet Heat.
Yeah.
So it had a little bit of sweetness, but it had, and I loved it. But then Golden Flake says they're closing. And I always wondered, it was such an iconic brand in the South, at least in our area in Alabama. But when you look at their plant, you know, that's where it failed to modernize, mm-hmm. you know, failed to keep up with the demand, didn't keep up with the advertising. You know, they just weren't advertising much. You just got used to the brand, and people who knew Golden Flake would like Golden Flake, but, you know, they're not doing Super Bowl commercials, spending, you know, $10 million on a Super Bowl commercial like Doritos or Cheetos or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so after a while, people like those, and then that just becomes your go-to brand. And then Golden Flake. Now there may be more behind the scenes than I'm aware of with that particular thing, but that was an iconic Birmingham brand that went away. I do want to follow up one thing that I said a minute ago. Cause you mentioned like we're starting two initiatives. Mm-hmm. So some of these principles, so I'm doing it from a nonprofit perspective. But some of these principles go over this way. So we're starting two initiatives. Number one, we feel like our customer is the one who has the need, mm-hmm. but there's something to be said. Every initiative we do, of course, costs money. So we want to meet the need, but then we want to promote it, not as a pat on the back, but to try to help people come along and say, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a good use of my money. So I want to financially support it. So if all we do, I'm mindful of what somebody from told Feeding America rep, he's like, I've been helping people do food insecurity for 40 years. What else you got?
Mm-hmm.
And because think about it, if you say I'm helping people food insecurity and we're just giving out food, is that very important? Yes. Is it life changing? Yes. To the person who needs it. But after a while, you do it year in and year out. The buzz is gone. The feel good's gone. It's just like, oh, yeah, we do this year after year. So they're like, hey, if you want our support, tell me another way you can impact people.
Okay.
You know, and so they have the money. They're willing to give you the money, but they want to have the buzz. They want to have something that they feel like is making a greater impact or a significant impact. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're connecting with the military base that we're butted up against. Of course, I'm retired military. I love the military, the ethos. But there's young families that are food insecure sometimes. And they may fall in this gap. They're not low enough income to qualify for SNAP. Sometimes they're right at that level. Mm-hmm. But then if you've got other costs that come along, it actually realistically pushes them below. But so one of the things we want to do is help families and lift them up and support them. And it supports overall readiness. It's already a stressful job in the military. So we're starting outreach and delivery of need to military, active duty military families. That program will grow. But we also, it gives us an opportunity to go to the command structure and say, hey, you got a bunch of colonels here in school. You got a bunch of majors. We're going to do local commercials about it. You know, we're going to promote it because people, as you know, in Alabama are very passionate. We have a lot of retirees. They're very passionate about the military, and they don't like the fact that young families, come into need. Yeah. So if they are able to support, do that, then we can all come together in that. But some of those underlying principles are really the same as any business. It looks a little different of how it actually comes out to play, but those underlying principles of staying new, staying fresh, staying relevant, applies.
To learn more about the wonderful Heart of Alabama Food Bank, we have a program called Bite by Bite, and it's specific about our food needs and everything else, and it comes up right after this show every single time it airs. And when you hear this show, you know Bite by Bite's coming up next, and you can find it wherever you get your favorite podcast. We're on every major industry out there. We're doing fantastic, so thanks for continuing to listen. Bite by Bite is up next right here with Michael Coleman on Tony Curry Radio.
Thanks, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.